Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. She was Grisabella in the original Los Angeles Company, which is sometimes dubbed the U.S. national tour that didn't tour number two of Cats. So welcome, Kim Criswell, and thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for asking me. It sounds like a lot of fun, this thing.
I am excited to have you here because you are on the earlier side of productions. I mean, this is very early. This is, I think, what you said, the second time that it was in the U.S., right? So this is like mid-80s. Tell me about your tour, because I usually ask my first question of what was your experience with Cats before you got cast, but there wasn't a lot of experience before that point. So, like, how did you even hear about this?
Interestingly, I have a long trajectory with Cats even before I did it, although it only took place over a couple of years. I was a Broadway girl. I was in the original cast of Nine when it started being talked about, this show. And so I sniffed around and I got myself a copy of the vinyl album of the British production. And I listened to it and I thought, well, I want to sing that song. I could sing that song. And then I got some auditions for it. So I went in and I auditioned. And I auditioned, I had four auditions. And on the fourth one, it was a Gumby Cat final. And
wow.
I was, at the end of it, the guy who was the production stage manager, who was a pal of mine because I'd worked with him before, said, hey, listen, you're really in with a shot. At this moment, you're the first choice for that. And I went, really? For the Broadway, the original Broadway.
Okay.
I was like, I don't want to be the Gumby Cat. So I went into the next audition and said, listen, guys, here's the thing. I know you're going to need somebody. You're going to need a cover. Maybe I'm too young, because I was in my mid-20s. I was like 24 when this was going on. I said, you're going to need an understudy at the very least. And I know I'm young for this, but, and everybody wants this part, but so do I. I said, can I sing the song? And they said, yeah. Sing the song. And I mean, the they I'm talking about were Trevor Nunn, Gillian Lynn, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cameron McIntosh. It was the A-team. You know, that's who it was. And I'm like, I don't care. I ain't scared of nobody. And so I sang it. And from then on, I was kind of up for Grisabella and the Gumby Cat. And so I went through another audition or two. And then they did their final casting. And I was not cast as either role. But I got a handwritten letter from Trevor Nunn delivered to my apartment, which was quite something, because nobody did that. Nobody did anything like that. And it was a really lovely, supportive letter that said, listen, you weren't quite enough this or enough that for these two roles, but, you know, I do want to work with you in the future. I think that you're a very talented person. But basically, it was a lot of compliments and you know, I was very disappointed, but it was a very flattering and it was a good letter, and it was really, I've always thought that was an incredibly gracious thing to do. Apparently, he sent not a whole lot of those letters, but a few to people who got very near but didn't quite get there. So I didn't know how close I'd gotten or what, So a year later, then the original cast, the original Broadway cast, I had a friend in it. The original Tantomile was my friend Janet, who TV watchers will know her as Aunt Viv on The Fresh Prince, okay. Janet Hubert. She was my friend. She was the original Tantomile. And I went as her opening night guest to the party. And so, you know, saw all of them again. And anyway, I was in the loop and didn't know it for future productions. I had no idea. So then a year later, they were kind of faffing around with me a little bit, not offering me anything, but talking to me about where they might have an opening as a Grisabella. And the National was going out. Mm-hmm. And at any rate, I was cast in a show called Baby. So I did Baby and said, no, not doing that. And then the next time it came up was the L.A. company. And they had said to my agent, look, you're going to have to go to L.A. if you want to audition for it. We're auditioning out there. We're not going to see people in New York. And I said, I'm not going to L.A. to do that. If they want me, they know where I live. Then they came back to New York and said, actually, we do want to see her. And there were three of us that they brought in. And I knew the other two girls. One of them had been one of the Avas in Evita and very talented, very good. And the other one was a good friend of mine from Nine. They made them go in first, those two, and sing Memory. And then they saved me for last. And then I went in by myself at the end. And the only person there was Andrew. Andrew was there with the casting director, Vinny, and with Tyler Gatchell, who was the company manager. Or they were the company management company. And they were all friends of mine, except for Andrew. I didn't know him. Mm-hmm. But I went in and I said, well, I guess I know what you want to hear. And Andrew said, no, I'm tired of that. Don't sing that. And I went, really? He said, yeah, sing something else. So wow. I sang Tomorrow, as in, you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. And he said, okay, that's good. But now I need you to sing something a little bit more moody, a little bit more ballady, a little. And I said, you mean like Memory? He said, no, I don't want to hear that. I said, really? So I sang a song called Unusual Way from Nine, which I had a part that I had played. And I finished, I got a little bit in, and then he stopped me and said, now go back and sing it as if you're at the end of your life and you're very, very sad and you're blah, blah. And so I went, oh, ding, ding, Grisabella sings Memory. Okay. And I sang it. And at the end of it, he said, well, we want you to do it. And I went, what? After all this time, just like that? And so that's how I was cast. It seems pretty clear that they had already decided that it was going to be me unless I really screwed it up. Yeah. So I was cast.
I love that you almost were challenged too. Like, don't sing Memory. You it's like, show no, don't sing here. That. Yeah, we want to make
like,
sure.
I was like, really? That you is really don't need to hear me sing it?
What was the time? That was a couple years from start to finish there? Like, how long was that?
Yeah, the Broadway Cats, like, Nine opened in May of 82. Cats opened in the fall. And so the auditions were that year, I think. So it must have been 2 years later when this is going on. It was like a year and a half, 2 years later, about. Because we started rehearsal in the fall of 84.
Okay.
In L.A.
So tell me a little bit about, at this point, like, what is the... I've heard a lot of the fan response at this time frame. What's the, like, acting in Broadway community response to Cats in this? Was this, like, everyone, I want to be in it, I need to be in it? Or was it a little bit of, like, this weird kind of show off onto the side? Like, what was the community that's performers thinking about it?
Well... nobody knew what it was yet, really, because we hadn't seen it for the original. I mean, by the time I got around to L.A., we'd all seen it. But for the original one, everybody wanted to be in it. I mean, it was gold dust to get an audition. And so I was lucky enough to get an audition in the first place. In fact, I'll tell you what I sang at my first audition, because you will get the beauty of this, although they did not. I was like, I'm going to pick the perfect audition song for this. I found this song called Paris is a Lonely Town, which is written by Harold Arlen, the same guy who wrote Over the Rainbow, great at ballads. You know, it's a sort of moody, Paris is a lonely town kind of song, sort of in the same mode as Memory. And I went in and sang that, and the clincher of it is, it was sung in an animated film by a cat character played by Judy Garland called Musette. I thought, this is the perfect song. So I went and sang that whole thing, and it went completely over their heads. None of them knew anything about what that was. But I mean, obviously they thought I sang pretty well, or else they wouldn't, it wouldn't have gone any further. But none of them got the reference. I was being too clever for only my own self. It was completely wasted.
One of those. Yeah. It's like if somebody would have got it though, it would have been,
I know, I would have felt like a genius, but I didn't end up feeling like a genius. Yeah. Anyway, desired effect, got a callback. That's all that mattered.
Exactly.
But, yeah. So, you know, a couple years later, it's L.A. I go out there. I've never been to L.A. And I realize that pretty much everybody was cast in the L.A. theater community. So I was the one they brought in from out of town.
The New Yorker and cast for Isabella, of course.
Yeah. I was not famous. I was not well known at all. So it was quite a daunting thing because, mm-hmm. you know, all those people in that company with me had auditioned to be Grisabella.
Yeah.
They were like, well, who is this you got then? We all bonded hugely and became a big family, but it was very daunting for me at the beginning because I realized that it was pretty uphill. They want to know, why'd you bring this person in from New York? I mean, who is she?
I love
it. You know, and critics and people like that were quite, why didn't we get Betty Buckley? You know, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, if the Schuberts had wanted Betty Buckley to do it, she would have done it. So they obviously didn't. They wanted me, and that's the way it goes.
It's very in character. You got to bring the outsider to come in to the tribe for Grisabella.
Exactly. And it helped that I had so many friends. By then, I'd had friends in every company of it. And there were only two companies, but I had friends in both of them. And for instance, the first day of rehearsal, my friend Kevin, who had been Old Deuteronomy in the Boston company, which then became the First National Tour, mm-hmm. had said, listen, when you go to rehearsal the first day, make sure that you're wearing really nice perfume. And I said, why? He said, well, you're going to do this improv. Jillian is going to have you do this improv where everybody crawls around and you're going to crawl all around and you're hanging back. And then you'll all end up in one great big pile. So make sure you smell really nice. So I did. I was like head to toe perfume. And we did end up doing that. And we ended up in this big pile. And then, you know, when the pile broke up, somebody near me said, who is that that smells so nice?
Yeah.
I said, it's me. I was warned. So it was just the things you do in Cats. It's just craziness.
I love it. So that's the Felinity School, right? And like the sexual clomp. I've heard a little bit about these things I've heard. I actually like to go back to this point in the rehearsal process for you, because the thing that I'm most fascinated about in this entire show is how you're explained the loose backstory of your character. And it seems, and I think you alluded to this earlier before we started recording, that everyone seems to be told slightly different things about their character.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we first started, the first day we were supposed to have Trevor Nunn with us, but he had been off doing this movie called Lady Jane and it had run over. And so he wasn't with us at the beginning. We had a resident director in his place, basically reconstructing what he did in the other companies. And he had sent a very, very long video where he had done at least 10 minutes on each character. And go, and Coricopat, well, Coricopat has a secret. You know, it's like that for 2 hours. One of our first sessions was sitting and watching the video of Trevor talking to us and telling us about our characters. I don't remember what he said about my character. I don't. Not. It's been 40 years. But, everybody in it was so jazzed because it made everybody go, oh, my character's important. I have a whole story. I mean, it's all woven all together. It took about 2 months for the company to realize that some people were in the chorus. Some of us were principals and some were in the chorus. It took a while for this magic spell to wear off and they go, oh, I don't have a solo, do I? I'm in the chorus. Wow.
It's everybody's got their full part and family. There is deep backstories for some of these, for all these characters. What do you remember from this? Even not just exactly what from Grisabella, but what stood out as you were hearing 2 hours of Trevor Nunn? Like, what did you go, really? What? How did this come up? Like, how did you think of this?
I I really can't remember what he said about my character. I just remember thinking, wow, he's gone into great detail in his head for every single character, and that's impressive. I was impressed with that. I thought that was amazing. What I do remember about rehearsing it was not knowing what the words to memory were meant to actually mean, because it's a series of kind of vague images. It's not, they're not actable lyrics. They're not, you know, they're not active verbs and things like, it's not the sort of thing where you go, and now I'm going to run to the wall, and, you know, it's not any of that. It's images. It's a series of images. And while we were rehearsing it, I felt very cut off from everybody for quite a while, because we would go in and we would do a dance warm-up every day, because, of course, I had to be in the opening, as Grizabella is always in the opening section as a generic cat who has no name, but she's out there.
They named him later. They named that cat later. It's named Baby Grizz in 2016.
They didn't name her in ours. Okay. She was just generic cat with a different wig on and a unitard, which was terrifying, because I don't know if you've ever put on a unitard and stood in a room full of really skinny dancers, but it is not something that's pleasant for those of us who don't look like that.
There's a reason I have not done any production, or I mean, besides actual talent of not being able to do any of this, but no, I have not put on a cat's costume or cosplayed this, because I do not need to be in a unitard.
Okay, well, I didn't either, but I had to.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something I needed to do on any kind of, you know, I needed that for myself. And also, the costume fitting was one of the most terrifying things I've ever done in my life, because you go in, at least at that point, you'd go in and you'd be in a room with John Napier, and he would put you in a white unitard.
Everybody's like, Victoria.
Well, it's just like, you know, anybody who doesn't have the most perfect dancer body in the world is horrified at the look of themselves in a white unitard. I was like, oh, God. And then he just gets a magic marker and he starts marking. That was how he created people's shadings.
Wow.
He would color it in with a marker on your white unitard so he'd know what to do.
So you just stood there while he basically colored each cat onto
each person. Yeah, he absolutely. That's how mine was done, and I'm sure that the others were too. Because I mean,
fascinating.
You know, she wears that unitard under her little dress with heels for the rest of the show. So there's a little more coverage and a coat and all that. But for the opening bit, she's just in a unitard like everybody else and in flat shoes. So, you know, I was just sitting there watching him with his magic marker just. marking shading down my legs and going, oh, let's just cover up that. I'm like, yeah, just paint it all black. Just paint it black.
Crazy. Absolutely
crazy. It was frightening, but fun. And of course, when we started rehearsing, we would go in every day, we'd do a dance warm-up, and then they'd drag me off to a room, and I would go through the bits that I do in the show, which, as you know, add up to about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'd go through that. Trevor wasn't there yet. Jillian was in the other room. So I was in the room with the resident director. And I do remember being frustrated with that part of the process, because I would ask him a question and he'd go, well, that's because that's how Betty does it. And I'd go, well, okay. I'd really like to know more about why. And he didn't usually have the why I was looking for. So he'd go, oh, Lori does it that way in the First National. And of course, I didn't really know Betty, but I knew Lori. And I'm like, well, shouldn't I make my own choices? There was one point where he was in the remark the cat section where he'd say, now listen, you know, you come in and they're horrible to you. They come up and scratch you, but you're never angry. And I said, why am I never angry? He said, well, you're just not. You're never angry. And I said, what am I, Jesus? I think I'm not. I think she's kind of flawed, isn't she? Isn't she kind of human and flawed? Like, she might get mad if somebody scratched her? Anyway, so we had a few of those things where it was very clear that he was frustrated with me and I was frustrated with him. And so I was very relieved when Trevor arrived, which was a couple of weeks before we opened, because I got him and I'm the first person he took off to a room and I just said, please talk me through all of this.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and he said, well, of course you can be angry. I went, Thank you. Good. Yeah. You know, he didn't get in the way of my instincts, and I could talk it through with him. And, you know, that mattered to me enormously, to be able to work all that stuff out. But I was really just working out. I wasn't working out backstory and all of that. You know, to hear that other people were told that she's not old, she's not dying. Gee, I thought I was old and I was dying. Mm-hmm. You know, that was what I was playing.
Yeah, there is so many rumors of, like, how you can think about the backstory. I wonder if it's in the 10 minutes of the tape that Trevor is supposed to tell you, but there's a couple that, like, there's the question of, like, what's the relationship with McCavity, and are you the mother of Bomb and Demeter or Victoria potentially, or why did you leave the tribe? Like, there's a lot of these open-ended interpretations that you can kind of go into, and I think a point that you mentioned that's fascinating, and I never thought about this the first time I saw it until someone said it, but to take all of that and convey it in 15 minutes on stage is a challenge. So,
well, it's good to have backstory, but it doesn't actually bring the here and now to the audience. The here and now is going to need to know what you're doing right now, why are you doing it. So that's why I was so busy with that, rather than going, oh, am I the mother of this one over here? I don't think it even occurred to me to wonder about that, because who had time? And there was no way to show it anyway.
Yeah, and I think it happens more in the reverse than it does in Grisabella's character. Because I think if you're Victoria and you are approaching Grisabella, you can approach, is this my mother? And have that kind of thought into that approach. Whereas I think Grisabella's character comes in and has such a short period of time and sings this kind of, you know, ballad, and it's a little bit more of where you are the focal point the entire time you're on. Versus a lot of the other cats are in the background and on stage almost the entire time, that they kind of almost need a little bit of that. What is my story?
Well, of course they do. I mean, I think all of these backstories and all these details kind of arrived on the scene in productions where they were on a bus and truck, and they're getting on a bus every day, and they're doing a different, you know, they're doing split weeks in two different cities, and they're constantly traveling, and they've been doing this show for a year. And they need to keep their mind engaged. So they're coming up with more and more and more details to explain what their, you know, what their life is and how they came to be this character. Honestly, in the LA production, I don't think anybody spent that much time on that, because we were trying to learn the show and just get it on its feet in those 6 weeks. So
I kind of love it. It seems like it wasn't as much brought to you as it sounds like later on it was. Like, I think in 2016, you got your 10 minutes. I think in 2016, it seems like they got a little bit more. They got three words. They got all this stuff to try to give them more of that backstory than maybe they were thinking about even in 84.
Yeah, I mean, things get embroidered more and more heavily as time goes on. They just do. And this was pretty early days for this show. You know, when you figure there's been a London company, and then there's been a Broadway company and a tour, and then us, and we were at the same time as the one in Sydney. So we were the first five companies, and we were the last two that us and the Australian one were the last two that the original A team put together, meaning Trevor, Gillian, Andrew. You know, the original Stanley Lebowski, the original people. From then on, companies got put together by assistants and by, you know, by the next level of people overseeing the show. So we had the benefit of the original team, and the original team was learning as they went too. Of course they were.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, I mean, the beauty of the show is it's an entire, like, family and scene and group is being built, which means that I don't think anybody probably would have ever needed to think about all the pieces that could have been the backstories, everything, because it's not relevant in a lot of cases, unless you're me or the super fans of the Junkyard trying to figure out this stuff, because we're recording 80 plus episodes, 90 episodes, trying to figure it out for other people. But to your point, you don't need it in some cases.
Well, and they're not carbon copies, the companies. The choreography may be the same. They try to keep it as much the same as they can. But you may watch a road tour where Bombay Arena has decided that, you know, this kitten over here is her long-lost sister. Yeah. And that's not being played at all on another company. It's just because those actors, they're playing on stage with each other all night. And they're filling up the space with stuff that's fun. and they're creating their own lives. But no two of them are going to be the same from company to company. The backstories are never going to be identical.
I have loved that, because when you look at the rumor mill, a lot of it, as I've uncovered some of the rumor mill, whether it's true or false, a lot of it has stemmed from me and this other cat were friends as actors before the show. And now our characters shouldn't be friends in the show, but we are. And so we kind of play off of the fact that we have a great relationship. And all of a sudden it turns a little bit of the super fans on their head, because they're like, these two cats shouldn't like each other, but they clearly are having a good time. And it's purely because of a relationship as two actors, which is
exactly such there's a two levels thing. Of these kinds of shows. There's two levels of stuff going on. There is the level of what you're playing and what you're supposed to be playing. And then there's the level of people just having fun.
Yeah.
And that's how you keep a long run alive, is to have fun and find ways to entertain each other and yourselves that don't hurt the show, ideally, although it's not always that pure. But, I mean, like with ours, with the Peaks and the Pollicles number, which we all just rolled our eyes and went, oh, I was so glad I didn't have to sing that, because it's a nightmare of words. And, you know, our poor Monkestrap, I mean, he has to deliver that and not go up on it. And our guy, Mark, was fabulous and wonderful. But every so often, he would get in the wrong verse and trip on a word. And we had a couple of very naughty cats that would sit down front with their backs to the audience and hold up little tiny ratings cards that would go 7.4. That's what I mean. That's what they get up to.
I love that.
If management caught it, they'd stomp them flat. But there was there was always playing going on. And in a show about cats, that's not the worst thing in the world, because cats do play.
We're going to take a quick break for some messages from our sponsors, and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
That is what I wanted to ask you next, which is, what are some of the memorable stories or quotes or lines or stuff that you remember from your group?
My favorite moment from when Trevor had gotten there, there was a moment where they were giving us notes. And of course, he went back to the beginning of this show with Jillian Lynn, mm-hmm. who was Jillian. Man, she was a force of nature. I just loved her. But she was very, very interesting and odd and unique. She was not like anybody else I've ever met. And she had her own way of looking at the world. And so they were sitting there talking about the opening number and, you know, all of us with our jellicle cats and singing and dancing and carrying on. And she said, oh, at this point. And I mean, I remember Trevor's face was the priceless thing, because she said, oh, at this point, you're all looking over here and then you hear something over there. And you go, oh, it's nothing. It's just a couple of cats having a bit of a fuckety on the roof. Then just Trevor's face was like, wow. It was kind of like, there she goes again. It's kind of like that.
Unbelievable.
Because, you know, she was capable of surprising him too. He just was like, wow, what goes on in her head? Other things, there was a funny audience thing that happened once that just cracked me up. When I would sing Remark the Cat, of course I would come out And, you know, for the first time you see Grisabella, and she comes out and everybody hisses at her and spits and scratches at her. And she sings a snarky little song to go, get away from me. And then she goes out while they sing the Grisabella, the Glamour Cat, rest of it to explain who she is. And she goes wandering out through the audience. And I would go out through the audience and then I'd wander through the, I had to wander through the lobby and then go back around to backstage and get back to my dressing room because I didn't have to do anything for another half hour. So I'd go back and get on my princess phone and sit on my little pink sofa. I mean, I was so spoiled. Anyway, I'd go out and usually I'd talk to the bartender out there. And so I was like, hey, how's it going? How was it? He said, listen, I have something great to ask you. I said, what is it? He said, well, last night I had a lady come up to the bar and ask me, in all seriousness, at the interval, she said, I don't know how to ask this, but what is a genital cat? I said, we howled, and I went, gonna need to give them a note about the diction, I think. Because I said, well, that's what's so funny. These cats don't have any genitals, none at all. It's all squashed into nothingness. We're all Ken dolls and Barbie dolls.
That is but really funny.
She was hearing Genital Cat through that whole number. That's what she thought we were singing. So,
I love that.
Isn't that's that great? That's one for the classic book. It is. the other thing, you know, we had, you know, the beginning of the show, if you've seen it, have you seen it, mm-hmm. Yes?
Of course.
I'm not sure if in the, I haven't seen the more recent revival, but so I don't know if they still did this. But one of the fun things that everybody had to do, and most of us got to a point where we're like, really, do I have to do that? Was at the beginning, we'd be squashed into this little vestibule, and then they'd start playing the overture. And then we would all slink around in the dark and then pop up in people's faces and flash our little green eye masks and watch the people go, ah, because they didn't know we were there. We called it the green eyes. And one day, we were all like crammed in, and we have to be really, really quiet. We can't say anything. So we're in there trying to make no noise so nobody hears us. And one of the cats, I won't mention his name, but he was the Gus, Growl Tiger, and he was very funny. He just, in the silence, went, I smell pussy. So we could not be quiet from that moment because we were screaming our heads off laughing. just, you know, you may need to cut that out because that's a bit vulgar, but it was funny.
Nothing is we cut. Just, that will it, not it's be just cut.
Not, that, well, it was funny. And, you know, that my memories with cats of cats are laced with stories like that of all of us just playing and having fun. We had so much fun with each other and we liked each other. You know, not a squabbly cast. We didn't squabble with each other. Most everybody got along, and it was just everybody playing on the set.
So I've heard that almost with every production I've talked to, and I've always wondered because I equate a lot of this as someone who's never done theater. I equate a lot of this to, and you can see all the stuff behind me, sports teams, where I've put on teams that all got along super well, and I've put on teams that didn't get as long as well. And I think that that's the same thing in theater. Like, you have casts that all get along super well, and there's some that probably don't. But I've never heard it in cats, and I've always wondered, is it because you are forced so early on to become so close to each other that you almost kind of have to let your guard down? And is that, like, is that because of the way the show is created, or is it just been good fortune?
Well, it is the physicality of it. The fact that you are crawling around on people, sniffing each other and ending up in big piles in the rehearsal room at different times. And, you know, the whole orgy part of the Jellicle Ball. I mean, you can't be coy. You can't be coy. And also, when you have a room full of dancers, dancers are so cool about their bodies. You know, their bodies are just their tools. They're not at all modest about any of it ever. Because their bodies are machines. They're just extraordinary things, dancer bodies. But we did, you know, there is a choice that is made. And I decided that it was a choice that Grisabella should make early on. Because I thought, well, there are two choices they have here. They can either pretend to hate me all night and then at the end decide they love me enough to let me, you know, be chosen. Mm-hmm. Or it can be the reverse. They can hate me all night and really hate me. And in the end, pretend to love me. I'm going to try to be the one that makes them pretend to hate me. I want to be bonded with this cast. Some Grisabellas, I'm not going to name any names, but there have certainly been Grisabellas who kept to themselves and were kind of hated by the company. Because, face it, it is a bit of a princess role.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You come in, you do the opening number, and that's the hardest work you do all night. Then you go and you change, and you hang around, and you come out and sing a little bit of a song, and then you're off until the very end of the Jellicoe Ball. And then you're mostly gone for the whole second half until you sing the big number and you get to go to Kitty Cat Heaven and die.
Yeah.
You know, I won't say it's an easy lead role, but it certainly is in terms of time on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It has its other ways that it's difficult, but quite something. So I remember, you know, me starting out with that company and not, because they were all in rehearsal all day, every day, I would do my little, I'd do the warm-up with them, and then I would do my go off and be taken into a room to sing through my stuff, and then they go, okay, you're done for the day. And so I'd get in my little car and drive to the Beverly Center and shop, because I didn't have anything to do. And meanwhile, they're killing themselves learning the Jellicoe Ball every day, all day. So they didn't know me. They didn't have a chance to get to know me for a while. So the first time we put the show together and did a run-through, none of them had ever heard me sing the song or anything.
You've been in a separate room.
I've been doing stuff
isolated.
In a different room.
Yeah.
I remember that was the most pressure that I ever felt, was that first run through with the cast, because I realized they don't know me. They all auditioned for this. They don't know why this chick was brought out from New York instead of them. So there's a lot riding on this. I've got to prove it right now. And then there's the other part of it, which is, okay, she has to have a nervous breakdown on stage in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that cat does to sing that during that song. That is what it is. And I know that the audience will think I'm acting, but the people on the stage with me will know that's how I cry. That's what I look like when I have a breakdown. And they will either decide to be protective of me when they see that, or they will decide to point and laugh. And that was the riskiest part, was realizing that if I really do, there's no faking it, for me anyway. I couldn't figure out how to fake it, so I didn't. To try to sing that song while you're having a nervous breakdown and really putting yourself into that state and making it that much of an absolute disaster breakdown. You know, people are watching you fall apart. I'm not a pretty crier. I'm an ugly crier. You know, they all know that now.
Yeah.
They all saw it every day. That's when we bonded, was that first run through, because they decided that I could stay.
Wow. You were just like the show, accepted back right in.
Yeah. They decided, you know, I was genuinely vulnerable, because I didn't know any way to be fakely vulnerable. I had to be real.
And thankfully, they didn't decide to kill you after, which is the
next
step.
Yeah, and they went to my level and treated me with respect and with caring. And, you know, it's very vulnerable. It's a kind of nakedness on stage that if you ever have to do. It's incredibly freeing, because once you've done that and having to do, I did it for a year and a half. Once you have figured out how you do that, and then you have to figure out how you keep doing that, mm-hmm. because thinking about your dead dog in third grade is not sad anymore once you've used it a few times.
Yeah.
You have to constantly be, you know, getting yourself to that place before you go on to sing that last song. But they, man, my company was with me. We bonded from then.
That is amazing.
And that's the joy of that show, because that is the reason. I think that is the key thing that audiences catch on to, is they go, okay, yes, sure, they're all cats, but she's wearing a dress and high heels, and she's having problems like me.
Yeah.
She's showing very human traits and being very, very vulnerable with it.
Totally. I think that's what makes the show so unique, is it's relatable. A cat is relatable to almost everybody. And so there's the people that are going to relate to Grisabella, and there's going to be people that are going to relate to all the other different cats. And so that's why there's a little bit of something for everybody.
Absolutely.
I want to switch gears and do a quick rapid fire before we talk about the million-dollar question. Okay. So, if you were not going to play Grisabella for one night, if you could just be any cat, which track would you wish you could have done once? And I'll say suspend male, female, like just which cat, if you could dance, if you could sing, if you could do anything, forget if you could physically do it or mentally do it or anything, just who would you want to do?
I think I probably would have liked to be Griddlebone, the woman that sings with Gus.
Okay.
And then turns into the opera, opera yeah. singing girl, because that was a lot of fun. That was, and honestly, I even in my fantasy, I cannot fantasize myself into one of the dance roles because I just know I'm not equipped in the way I would need to be. So I will fantasize myself into one of the possible roles, which would be that one, because that one is a lot of fun. It's a good sing. And honestly, the girl who played it in our company, Sally, was my understudy. So,
reality,
the people that had the more singery roles tend to cover each other.
I realize that I give that disclaimer because I'm talking to all these extremely talented people. It's for me. It's because I can't sing or dance or do any of these roles. So I'm giving the disclaimer as if like, all right, so if I was just blessed one day with being able to sing or dance, which one would I want to do? But who are your favorite and least favorite characters in the show?
I really like... I can't stand Bustopher Jones. I think that's such a waste of space. It's like, oh, please don't make me watch that. It's not the fault of the actor. It's just like, they could cut this. I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah.
But most favorite characters. I like Bomb Ballerina. Everybody likes her because she's just out there. She's mm-hmm. like, I'm not going to apologize for who I am. I'm sexy. I want you to look at me. Can you see me? Here I am. I'm going to wiggle my butt in your face if you can't. Yeah. She's right out there. I like that.
What is your favorite song from the show?
Memory, of course.
Yeah.
Although I love the Moments of Happiness, too.
Okay. I love it. Since you did perform in L.A. the entire time, which cat do you think gives off the most L.A. vibes?
Oh, gosh. Tugger. Rum-tum okay. Tugger.
I was thinking Bomb. But I think both of those kind of have the same kind of persona.
Tugger. And he was an L.A. guy, and he was married to a TV star, and he was just, he was quite fabulous, but he was very L.A. Very L.A.
I love it. All right, so the million-dollar question. I have argued... that I don't think Grisabella was the right choice. And so I would love to hear your take. Do you want to defend your year and a half of being Grisabella, or do you want to say, all right, I'm going to pick somebody else to be the Jellicle choice?
Well, I'm going to defend myself or her, okay. Grisabella, as the choice. And there's the reason for that. There's one thing about her that is different from everyone else, at least as I played her. She's dying. She's desperate. She needs it. She doesn't want to die alone.
So you don't think she will make it another year? She's got Mm-mm. She's got to go now. Okay.
No. I mean, I think that during the song, when she's singing Memory, there's a point in the middle where she actually falls down.
Mm-hmm.
That's not because she's being histrionic. It's because she can't walk.
Okay. So you're
she's failing. Her body is failing, I believe. I think that's what that is. And she manages to struggle to her feet, but she needs it.
Okay. So
she needs redemption. She also she's the human choice.
What do you mean by
because
that?
she is the choice that if you're going to, live in a what would Jesus do kind of world. What would Jesus do? He would pick the one that really needs it. He would pick the one that needs the redemption, he would not pick the one that's earned it.
Okay.
He would pick the one that needs it. And by picking that one, everyone else learns compassion. So they get to learn from it.
I think that's the redemption story makes sense. I think what you said something that I've counters against something that I've been arguing most recently, which is it almost bothers me that she gets let back to the tribe. She gets like re-welcomed to her family and then immediately killed off. And I thought, like, hey, why doesn't she go next year? But your whole point is that she's not going to make it. She's got to go now. So how? What about Gus? Because I think Gus is kind of the same of, like, not that also needs it, you know, is really getting up there. Seems like he might not make it another year. Is that even somebody that's in consideration?
I think he should be under consideration, certainly more than, you know, the Gumby cat or, you know, the Mr. Mistopheles or or Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer, who are pretty much kittens. I think why her over him is because she is so flawed, because she is in need of actual compassion, and she has learned something. Because remember, think about this. I don't know if you've ever had a cat, but cats are not, they're not pack animals. They don't like to be in packs.
Yep.
They're quite solitary in a way. And when they're dying, they go off by themselves to die. So for her to need to be around her kind so much that she will overcome the instinct of dying alone that is, you know, built in to a cat, any cat, she really, really, really is afraid of dying alone. That's what it is. And that is the thing that is the most human thing. We all have that same fear. Mm-hmm. There's no one without that fear. That is why she has to be accepted with them. She just wants to be near them. She thinks she's going to go in and see them, and then she's going to die quietly in the corner, but she'll be near the warmth.
I love talking to Grisabella's because you have such passionate answers to this, and you always, every Grisabella always defends Grisabella. What would your take be is if you as Grisabella don't come back this year? Because I think the assumption, a pretty fair assumption, is that you come in halfway through the show almost, and through, if we're ignoring the show, through the decision that night, who goes if you don't show back up?
Who should be the second choice?
The second choice? Let's pretend that you don't even, like, this isn't your year. What if it's next year that you have that need?
I think it's probably Gus.
Gus?
Okay. I think Gus is the one who's nearest to needing it, because there comes a point where, you know, if you're an animal, you're at the end of your lives, even if you're a cat and you're supposed to have multiple ones. And, you know, whatever this reward is, I mean, it is the original poems, there's a sort of Christianity-based thing. There's a heaven aspect to it. There is, you know, it is kind of allied to that belief system. Mm-hmm. So, everybody that is Christian wants to die and go to heaven. And, you know, that they've sort of put that on these cats in a way. Yeah. That's why you even have this. This is the reward. Yeah. You get to go off to heaven in your whatever version of the set you're in.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Wherever you're going.
Because ours was, you know, we had the tire, but ours had a thing that was flown in that looked like a big kind of meteorite. And it would fly across and kind of dock with the, it wasn't like the Broadway set. It would kind of dock with the tire, and then I would get in it, and then it would go out at an angle, so kind of diagonally. And we would always go, I remember when we first did the tech of it and going to John Napier and saying, well, what is that? Is it a meatball or is it a bathtub? And he said, oh, I think it's something festive from Vegas. Because it's covered with lights. So, yeah, that works.
That is so fun. So that's the Heaviside Lair is the upstage in Vegas.
Yeah, it's the meatball that takes you there. And honestly, one of the worst shows I ever had was one time the tech crew didn't quite make it dock. And so it didn't get close enough to the tire for me to get on it. So I didn't get to go anywhere. I was just stuck on the tire. And I'm like, here I am, and here's the big finale song. And, well, I'll just sing along. And I just sang along until I realized I didn't know it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, uh-oh, turn my mic off, guys.
Yeah.
Just wow. Going, damn it, we've just ruined the whole plot. That's what there is of it.
That is fun. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your stories and defending Grisabella. How can we stay in touch? I know you are on Twitter. Where else can we stay in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter. I have a website, kimcriswell. What is it? It's not .com because somebody had that one. It's one of those.
We'll find it.
It's .co.uk.
We'll link it.
People want to go listen to me sing things, and you can look me up on YouTube. I'm kind of all over YouTube. Amazing. You know, but I live in London now, so you know, I don't know how much of what I do over here gets back across the pond to you people over there.
I think this audience base is all over, including, I know, a lot. I talked to a couple people that listen to every episode that are in London, so I know that this will reach everybody.
Well, I hope so. That's nice, because, you know, Cats is forever, they said. Now and forever,
and it's everywhere. It's all over. It's playing all over.
Yeah, and then there's the movie, but that's another chapter.
different podcast. That's what started this, but that's a whole other episode.
Oh, man. I knew they were in trouble with that movie when there was all this discussion about whether the cats would have CGI anuses or not. And I just thought, we are in so much trouble. There's no way to salvage this if that's a discussion that's being had.
It has been a very easy punchline. I actually will say, as this is being recorded, because I'm not sure when it's releasing, but as it's recorded, I recently started writing stories for the Broadway Beat, which is a satire website, and I my most recent story was making fun of the Cats movie, so it is there for its purpose, and I'll share that with you when we hop off.
Oh yeah, definitely. I need to know about that.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being an amazing guest, and thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else to listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.